Committee will come to order. Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Garrison.
Here.
Vice Chair Salzman.
Here.
Ranking Member Woodson. Representatives Abbott.
Here.
Amnesty. Here. Antone.
Here.
Bartleman. Black.
Here.
Campbell. Kennedy.
Here.
Coster.
Here.
Mello.
Here.
Skidmore. Steele.
Here.
Trabulsi.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee. As always, please make sure your cell phones are turned off and your laptops as well. I want to begin today's meeting by welcoming all of our returning and new members. Typically, we do introductions, but we all know each other, so we're not going to do introductions. If you don't know your colleagues, you need to get to work getting to know them. So we're going to skip introductions today, but I do want to introduce our committee staff, because these folks are great, and they will make our lives much easier. Brian Clark is our budget chief. I'm not going to ask all the staff to do this, but I am going to ask Brian. I told him I'm going to throw him a couple curveballs. I am going to ask Brian to give a quick summation of his experience and how he got here. And Brian, introduce yourself to the committee.
All right, well, I'm Brian Clark. I've been with the House of Representatives for about 14 years, healthcare pretty much the whole time. And Chairman, I'm excited to work with you.
Maybe a little less so now that I threw that on you. I also want to introduce Emma, our administrative assistant, Billy Fontaine, our budget specialist down there. Ade Adarabibi, our budget analyst. Did I get that right, Ade? Close enough? All right. And Sean Smith, one of our budget specialists. The staff in healthcare appropriations is some of the best in the business. I really encourage each of the members of this committee to set a time to come talk with these folks, introduce yourself to them, let them get to know you a little bit personally, and not just as a name on a roll sheet. They're really top-notch, and they're going to do great work for this committee. They are always available to assist us with questions or information, so please don't ever hesitate to reach out. We do have a couple of people do want to recognize this morning before we start. We always want to thank our sergeants for what they do to keep us and our guests safe. So thank you all for what you guys do. We appreciate you. And we also have a longstanding rule in this committee that when a member has their child present, we're going to introduce them. So Sadie Coster is always in the back there with somebody. So Sadie, we're glad you're here. Your mom's pretty awesome, so we're glad you're here. Folks, what we're going to do today, we're going to provide a brief overview of the Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee. This presentation is intended to give all of us a high-level overview of the departments that comprise our area of responsibility, the current year budget of these departments, and various key points related to the programs and issues that we're going to deal with during the upcoming session. Before we get started, just some housekeeping matters. As you can tell, I'm kind of informal about these sorts of things. Members, you have to get up, you got to grab some coffee, you got to step out, do whatever you need to do. This is an informal process. But with that, we are also going to be very efficient with our time. So we're going to move. If you have questions, I'd ask you just kind of hang tight to the end. If there are matters that just for personal edification, maybe talk to Brian. Come see him, you know, get smart on the issues. We're going to move in this committee. It has a longstanding tradition of being, I think, the best subcommittee in the Florida House. We get a lot of work done. We're going to get a lot done. A lot's going to be expected of the members of this committee. So when you get your packets, review them before you get here. This isn't going to be death by PowerPoint. We expect you to know the information, show up ready to work, and we're going to have a good time, but we're going to get a lot of work done and do it in an efficient manner. So with that being said, thank you all. We're glad you're here. And again, want to thank Speaker Renner and Chair Leak for the opportunity to chair this very important subcommittee. With that being said, if you could, turn your attention to the meeting packet or the presentation on the screen. If you've got a moment, we're going to talk very briefly about what it is we do in this committee. The first slide that we're looking at shows a snapshot of the current year funding and full-time authorized employees for each of the six departments within the purview of this subcommittee. Total funding is located in the far right-hand columns you can see over there. For example, on the top line, the Agency for Healthcare Administration, which is going to be referred to as ACA. For those of you who aren't familiar, freshmen haven't dealt with this before, you're going to hear that acronym a lot. The Agency for Healthcare Administration is one of our primary areas of responsibility. So that's when we say ACA, that's what we're talking about. They have a total funding of $38.6 billion. It's billion with a B. It is the largest of all the health care departments, because this is where our Medicaid program is housed here in the state of Florida. Remember, when I first started as a member, I was why are we doing Medicaid? Isn't that a federal program? You'll find out very quickly. We have a lot of responsibility for Medicaid, both financial and otherwise, and it's really, quite frankly, our primary responsibility in this committee. So you're going to hear a lot about that. $38.6 billion to ACA, and they are responsible for our Medicaid program. If you look at the total, the bottom total in the bottom right there of that column, you'll see the total funding for all six departments under our purview totals about $49 billion, again, billion with a B, for the current fiscal year. So when I say we have a lot of work to do, that's why. $49 billion of taxpayer monies is our responsibility to make sure we're spending it wisely. Pie chart at the bottom left breaks out each department's percentage of funding to the total funding. Again, you look at ACA, it's the largest, 79% of the total health care budget. Pie chart to the right shows the breakout of funds by the funding source. So federal funds comprise about 59% of the funding, and there's very little discretion in how we use these funds. As you learn about Medicaid, you'll see it's a combination of federal and state dollars that go to finance that program. While we have little discretion, there are parameters that the state has to meet in order to earn these federal dollars. If we don't do that, we're not eligible, and that's obviously very important. The remaining 44% of the funding is general revenue and state trust funds. However, a portion of these funds are utilized as a state match or maintenance of the effort to draw down the federal funds as well. That'll make more sense to you as we go through this process. See on the next slide, a five-year funding history for this area of the budget. This slide shows the five-year funding history for the Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee. The primary driver of these increases over the last several years has been the increase in the cost of Medicaid related to the federal public health emergency in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. You'll see, for those of you who aren't super familiar with how these charts are laid out, the green line that goes down and then up and then down a little bit is the increase year over year over the prior year's funding. So you'll see that when the pandemic came and the effects of that became real, our funding shot up accordingly. And we'll talk about why that is in just a little bit. In FY 2018-19 and 19-20, it had to do with Medicaid. So prior to the pandemic, the Medicaid caseloads in the state of Florida were about 3.8 million enrollees, so 3.8 million Floridians. As of November of 2022, when we were all elected or reelected for this term, the enrollment had grown from 3.8 million to 5.5 million Floridians, and it's continuing to increase. And there's reasons for that, some of which have to do with policy from the federal government that we'll talk about as well. And it goes without saying that as the enrollment increases, as the Medicaid enrollment in the state increases, so do our expenditures. So we'll deal with a lot of departments, very important departments within the state. Their budgets will come through this subcommittee. We're going to list out just some of the key responsibilities for these various agencies in this presentation here. So you see ACA, Medicaid, kid care, things of that nature. There's two, I'm going to go forward and then come back here. So you see ACA, Agency for Persons with Disabilities, often referred to as APD, Department of Children and Families. So we hear DCF, that's our responsibility. Department of Elder Affairs, small but mighty. That's their little tag phrase. And then Department of Health and the Department of Veterans Affairs, all of those folks are part of our responsibilities. I am going to ask, you'll get to know these services that are provided by these various agencies very well during the part of our discussion. It's important to understand what they do. But there's two of them in particular that I've asked Brian to give us a little bit of an update on, just because I want to make sure you're going to hear these terms a lot, and it's important to understand what we're talking about, and that is under the ACA budget, the Medicaid program, and under APD, what the iBudget waiver means. Again, you're going to hear those terms a lot, and it's very important. If you learn nothing else today from this committee, we will know what Medicaid is and what it means for us, and we'll know what the iBudget waiver is. So, Brian, I'm going to turn it over to you at this point.
Thank you, Chairman. So the Medicaid program is the healthcare safety net for low-income Floridians. And as the chairman said, it's a partnership between the state and federal governments. Now, the purpose is to provide health coverage to eligible individuals. However, it does not provide coverage for all low-income individuals. So the current eligibility prioritizes low-income children, disabled individuals, and elders. So as the chairman said, as of last month, Medicaid was serving approximately 5.5 million individuals. 2.8 million of those are children, and the remaining 2.6 were adults. Now, Florida delivers this health care to these individuals through a comprehensive managed care model. So the care is mostly provided by HMOs. These plans are paid they're prepaid a capitated payment, so it's a per member per month amount, and that's used to manage the care of its members. On the APD side, Agency for Persons with Disabilities, the iBudget waiver, basically what that is, it's a waiver from the normal Medicaid program. It's referred to as the iBudget waiver, and what that is that it's an individualized budget amount that each recipient gets. These are for individuals with developmental disabilities, and the goal is to keep these people at home or in a community setting as opposed to an institution. Again, it's a waiver to Medicaid, so it's not an entitlement, and Florida statute does limit the amount of funding for this program.
Thanks, Brian. So speaking of Medicaid, this is a summary of kind of recap what Brian was saying. This slide is specific to Florida's Medicaid program. Again, our Medicaid program is 77% of the healthcare funding. And again, it covers about 5.5 million beneficiaries, including, I think, last year, I remember, over 60%, I believe, of Florida's children. In 2011, the legislature directed the implementation of the statewide Medicaid managed care program. Brian just alluded to that. But that's a term, for those who aren't necessarily familiar with the healthcare and Medicaid world, that's a term you're going to hear a lot, managed care. Currently, 78% of the Medicaid population, so the 5.5 million beneficiaries, currently 78% of that population is served. They receive their Medicaid services through managed care. It leaves a small percentage of recipients who receive services through what's called the fee-for-service delivery system. Fee-for-service, obviously, is just services provided. They submit their fees for reimbursement. The fee is then paid as what's called fee-for-service. Managed care is someone has a contract, they receive a set amount of money, and they're responsible for managing the care of the individuals. So there's managed care and fee-for-service. You need to understand those two distinctions when we're talking about Medicaid. Managed care, again, when healthcare plans manage how their enrollees receive their healthcare services, that's managed care. It's accomplished by health plans working with different providers. So the plans work with providers to offer quality healthcare services and make certain that enrollees have access to all the needed doctors, healthcare providers for covered services. Folks who are enrolled in managed care receive their services from providers that have a contract with the health plan. Okay, again, that's distinct from fee-for-service. We're talking about money with Medicaid. This is important to understand. These two charts here relate to our Medicaid program. The first slide on the left shows how your Medicaid dollars are spent. So, for example, while the elderly, blind, and disabled only make up about 26.2% of our Medicaid enrollees, they make up about 58% of our expenditures. So while that is a smaller portion of the total Medicaid population, it's over half of our Medicaid dollars go to that subset of enrollees. Conversely, children, I think I mentioned, over 50% of Florida's children are on Medicaid. Children make up over 49% of the total enrollment numbers, but they make up only about a quarter, 24.5% of our expenditures. It's important to understand as we look at where dollars need to go. The chart on the right also gives you a breakout of the Medicaid enrollees by the age group. You saw earlier that the children are a substantial percentage of that subset. This slide here provides data related to the Agency for Persons with Disabilities. The major program within this department is the home and community-based Medicaid waivers, Brian mentioned a little bit earlier. Again, that's the I-budget waiver. The purpose of this, again, as Brian mentioned, is to provide home and community-based supports and services to eligible individuals with developmental disabilities who are living at home or in a home-like setting and utilize an individual budgeting approach. The waiver currently serves approximately 35,000 clients in Florida. As you can see from the chart on the right, the legislature has provided significant increases in funding for the waiver over the last several years. It's substantial. Most of this funding has been to enroll more individuals from the wait list into the iBudget waiver program. And you'll hear about that as we go through this committee of this year. APD also runs several institutions, including Sunland and Mariana, and I'm going to butcher this, Takachutli in Gainesville. The department houses about 630 individuals in these institutional settings. If you look at DCF, the Department of Children and Families, as you all know, provides a variety of services related to Florida's safety and child welfare services. This includes the Florida Abuse Hotline, which accepts reports of abuse or neglect 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, throughout the state. DCF also oversees the child protection and welfare services, mostly through contracts with 17 community-based care agencies located around the state. Community-based care is another acronym you're going to hear, CBCs. These folks negotiate contracts with respected local nonprofit agencies to provide child welfare services in local communities for kids who have been abused, neglected, or abandoned. The department also performs child care regulation by conducting inspections on over 8,700 child care settings throughout the state. The purpose of this program is to ensure a healthy and safe environment for the kids in child care settings and also to improve the quality of their care through regulation and consultation. All right, here we go. DCF also manages and provides substance abuse and mental health services through contracts with 7 managing entities. I know this issue is particularly important to many members of this committee. The managing entities do not provide direct services. Rather, they do subcontract with local and regional community-based providers to allow the behavioral health services to be tailored to specific behavioral health needs in each region of the state. Lastly, the department oversees the state mental health treatment facilities for both civil and forensic placements. There are 6 facilities, 3 of which are state-run, 3 of which are privately operated. These facilities provide treatment and housing in a secure environment to persons with severe and persistent mental illness who unfortunately cannot be treated in less restrictive community settings, and also to individuals who have a mental illness or involve incompetency restoration in the criminal justice system. This committee also will deal with appropriations for the Department of Health, DOH. DOH does a number of things, and this summarizes some of them. The Tobacco Education and Use Prevention Programs. This is a state constitutionally required program. The chart on the right shows the increase in funding of this program since its inception in 07-08. The department's also responsible for the regulation of many healthcare providers and facilities that operate in the state, as well as Children's Medical Services, which procures family-centered health services using a statewide network of specifically qualified medical professionals to eligible children who are deemed medically involved, complex, or fragile. All right. This is a summary of some of the notable program issues we're going to be dealing with this year. Perhaps most pressing and maybe most important for our purposes in the budget is the federal public health emergency. We are still under a federal public health emergency, and the state is required to keep continuous coverage for individuals enrolled in Medicaid in order to receive an additional 6.2% enhanced federal match. All right, that's a lot of stuff. So basically, during the federal health emergency, what that means for us, and Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, folks who have been, we've seen our Medicaid numbers shoot up during the federal public health emergency from the numbers I talked about 2 years ago to today. During the federal public health emergency up to this point, the folks who have been enrolled have not been able to be kicked off those rolls. Even if they're no longer eligible for Medicaid, they stay on the rolls. What we get in return for that additional financial burden is an additional 6.2% of an enhanced federal match We talked earlier that Medicaid is a combination of funds between the federal government and the state of Florida. During the public health emergency, the ratio of federal to state dollars has been increased in favor of federal funds by 6.2%. Flip side of that for Florida is that we have a substantial number, greater number of people on Medicaid that we are responsible for, even if the proportion is lower. So there's an adjustment in the balance. The overall number has increased dramatically. Future changes to the federal public health emergency and the state's response to it, and how that affects continuous coverage as well as the enhanced federal match, very likely will impact our future Medicaid expenditures, and we're going to be dealing with that this year. We also see, as an issue that we see coming down the pipe, mental health and civil and forensic commitment. Our state's mental health treatment facilities have been experiencing wait lists for both civil and forensic commitments. With forensic admissions are now statutorily required within 15 days of adjudication. So there's a lot happening there. During the last several years, we've approved additional funding to address these wait lists and the staffing shortages that we're dealing with all throughout healthcare, and it's really exacerbated the wait list situation. Given the nursing shortage is projected to continue for the reasonable future, and the funds provided by the legislature have mostly been provided in a non-recurring manner, it's unknown to what extent the department will require future resources to address these staff shortages and subsequent wait lists. Also, you see community-based care, the CBC funding we talked about. The CBC lead agencies have consistently run operational deficits. It's required additional current year appropriations beyond the base funding level. To address this issue, the legislature in recent years has provided an increase of $150.5 million during the current fiscal year to be allocated for core service functions. This funding brings each CBC to at least 100% of its optimal funding amount as needed, as determined by the department, DCF. Given there's been no evaluation of the impact of this new funding methodology, it's unknown to what extent the DCF determination of each CBC's needs is sufficient. We'll be looking at that. Last on this screen is the FDVA trust fund insolvency. That means during the past 2 years, the legislature has provided general revenue funding to the department due to decreased revenues in its trust funds. The department's trust funds have been depleted as a result of two reasons. Number one, the department utilized most of its trust fund cash to open two new nursing homes for our veterans. And number two, the revenues from these trust funds were adversely affected as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. And so the trust fund obtained its revenues from the veterans' nursing homes. As a result of the pandemic, the census numbers were down considerably, thereby creating a decreased revenue stream to the trust fund. In addition to these things, there are the issues that come up all the time with this committee. So hospital funding is always going to be an issue. Supplemental payments, how the money is used, how it's allocated, and how it's used. We'll look at very closely at our financial commitments to our elderly as well, nursing homes. What are we doing there? Is the money being spent in the way it's appropriate? And any number of issues that are going to come before this committee as it relates to healthcare. You can see from this presentation, it's a wide, wide range of issues. And I'm excited about the work. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. As fun as it can be when you're talking about spreadsheets. So that's the end of today's presentation. Before we get out, I want to do a couple things. First, I want to recognize our Vice Chair, Representative Salzman, number one on the map, number one in my heart. She is a passionate advocate for the mental health needs of the state, and I'm thrilled to have her as my Vice Chair. She's a great member and brings a lot of passion and energy to this team, and has been a real force in the Pensacola area for mental health and resources for those who are adversely affected by the COVID-19 crisis. I also want to say hello to my ranking member, Representative Woodson, one of my dear, dear friends in this process. I'm thrilled that she is the ranking member of this committee. For those of you who don't know Marie, she is just a true warrior for her district and for the folks that she represents, and really believes strongly in the mission of this committee and what we do. And Marie, I'm thrilled to have you on this committee working with you. Thank you. I'm honored to have you. Lastly, I'll just say before we get out of here, time is a precious commodity, and I want to honor your time and respect your time. So we will start promptly, and we'll try to wrap up early. But I also want to make sure we spend the time necessary to go through issues as they develop that need the attention. So the ranking member and myself will be working on these issues to make sure that every member has an opportunity to be heard and an opportunity to dig in to the issues that we have. My only ask of you as your chairman is do your homework, be ready, and if there are questions that could be answered before you get here to make sure we're using efficient use of everyone's time, avail yourself of our staff. They're here for us. And the last thing I'll say is this subcommittee, both in the last couple of years and the years prior, really has done incredible work. I think some of the best committee meetings that I've had in my brief time in the Florida legislature have been as part of this committee. I see Representative Trabolsi, our past vice chair down there. I know she would agree to that. We really want to keep this culture going. So be prepared to work, come with good questions, we're going to do some good work in this committee. I'm thrilled to have each of you with us. And with that, Representative Campbell moves your rise.